We're looking at the pipeline for manufacturing jobs in Northeast Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kant. Thanks for being here. In recent weeks, the Biden administration and Congress have put apprenticeships and job training programs in the spotlight. The House passed a bipartisan bill calling for more than $3.5 billion over 5 years for apprenticeships. The White House announced last month it wants to create nearly 1 million apprenticeship openings. How do you think these steps would affect the manufacturing workforce here? Do you work in manufacturing? What's your job like? How did you get trained up? It's 800-642-1234. Ann Franz is Executive Director of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance. This is a group of manufacturers working with educators, workforce development, chambers of commerce, and state organizations promoting the manufacturing sector. Ann, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. I really appreciate you having me on this morning.
Well, give us a snapshot of what the manufacturing sector looks like in your part of the state, especially in this COVID crisis.
Well, we are very fortunate in this state to be blessed with so many manufacturers. In Northeast Wisconsin, which we consider the 18 counties in the state, 23% of all the jobs are in manufacturing. And when you compare the state being a 16% average, and the country on average, 9% of the population is working in manufacturing, this is really a hotbed of manufacturing.
Yeah, nearly one in four.
Yeah.
Nearly one in four jobs.
Yeah. In fact, in terms of the country, Wisconsin ranks number two in terms of having the most manufacturing jobs per the population. Do you know who number one is?
I do not.
It's Indiana.
Okay.
Just closely behind them.
So when you talk with employers, these manufacturers, do they have enough skilled workers to fill these openings?
Yeah, unfortunately, we are, and I was just talking to a gentleman yesterday with a company, and he's like, I have lots of great jobs, benefits, good-paying jobs, but he can't find the talent he needs. We actually have been studying this over the last 10 years. We work with the University of Oshkosh, and they pull companies each year in the fall. We look at companies that have $3 million or more in revenue, plus 25 or more employees. And past fall, we had 128 companies take the survey. And when we asked them, are you having a hard time finding talent? Unfortunately, 71% said yes. And then we asked, well, what jobs are you having a hard time finding? And those ranged from just entry level to welders, industrial maintenance technicians, engineers. So there is so many opportunities, and that's what we need to do is come together and share the good news about manufacturing.
You mentioned entry level jobs. Are companies willing to train up workers to fill some of these positions they have?
Most definitely. What companies are really looking for are individuals that are willing to show up for work and put in a good 8 hours worth of work, right? And so there's lots of opportunities with training within the organization, as well as most of our companies that are members, and we have over 190 manufacturers that are members, have tuition reimbursement. And so, you know, it's really interesting. We've been working with parents who are like, how am I ever going to pay for college? And we have companies that said, hey, if your student, your child comes to our company, we'll pay their tuition. And a great example of that is registered apprenticeship.
We're going to talk about apprenticeships in just a moment, but I'm wondering how have robotics, how have automation, digital skills changed manufacturing and the workforce keeping up with these changes?
That's a great question. We are now in a totally different age, Industry 4.0, and that's the fourth industrial revolution. And a couple years ago, Microsoft contacted me and said, you know what? We like what you're doing as an organization. If we gave you money, how would you invest in that? And I'm like, you know what? We need to understand where companies are at in terms of Industry 4.0. So we commissioned St. Norbert College to do a study, and we had 104 companies take that study to see where they were in terms of Industry 4.0. what was really interesting is most didn't have a plan, but both know that they need to get a plan. And some of the things that they were looking at is, one, data analytics. With Industry 4.0, that's really the digitization of manufacturing. It's getting all these different data together. And data is only as good as the person that's looking at the data, right? So data analytics skills is critically important. So our organization has partnered with LinkedIn Learning, where we have now had over 80 people take this training to have that knowledge in data analytics skills, to work together with other companies. In fact, over 40 companies have participated. So that's a huge skill in terms of Industry 4.0. We also saw in that study that process engineers are going to be in high demand. So if you're looking for a job and thinking about a career, what to go into, be sure to go into process engineering. One of the problems, though, with process engineering is there's no degree called process engineering.
I was going to say, what is it?
Exactly. So there's no degree. So how do we let people know what degree they need to go to? So most process engineers are chemical engineers. And so helping educate kids in understanding what these great jobs are is really critically important for manufacturers to be successful.
If you're just joining us, we're looking at the manufacturing sector with Ann Franz. She works on behalf of manufacturers in the northeast part of our state, and we're getting a read on what the industry is like there. Do you work in manufacturing? What is your job like? How did you obtain your skills? And what should people understand about working in manufacturing? It's 800-642-1234. Joshua is joining us from Watertown. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, Kate. So I really wanted to comment on this because this is something that I've been dealing with in my personal life. I've been looking to, you know, do an apprenticeship. I've been looking to get into the manufacturing sector because I know that there's a lot of jobs. I mean, 71%, that's quite a bit for the people that took the survey. Now, one thing that I found is that Indeed Post, Monster Post, all of those recruitment websites, on their website, those companies that do offer apprenticeship, they do not say it on their website. They ask for all of these qualifications, but they do not specify that this program is eligible for an apprenticeship. That is a huge problem. I have looked for a long, long time for apprenticeship programs, so I actually did some more research and went to the Department of Labor website where the apprenticeship program is listed, and then you go in there and you can look at the companies that offer apprenticeship programs. A lot of those numbers are the phone numbers and emails are outdated. I'm still waiting for some companies in Wisconsin. I don't want to name their names on air, but I have went to the Department of Labor website and went and tried to get an apprenticeship. I mean, and I'm actually not even an entry level. I'm actually a mid-level, you know, I have skill, you know, in certain areas. But, you know, I just wanted to let your caller know that, you know, to get that 71% down, I mean, it's got to change where people are going to look for jobs. And then they see you have to have, you know, a bachelor's degree in science or
Joshua,
you have to have experience.
Yeah, Joshua, thank you so much for sharing that and the research you've done. And what is the state of apprenticeships in our state?
Well, I appreciate Joshua's phone call, and shame on these companies not sharing that wonderful opportunity that they have within their organizations. And for Joshua, I would recommend contacting his local technical college. They do have an apprenticeship coordinator, and that may be able to help him navigate to those businesses. Wisconsin is actually the first state that has offered registered apprenticeship. It's now over 100 years. So we were really the catalyst to registered apprenticeship, and it's exciting that the country and the Biden administration is really looking at how they can invest even more in registered apprenticeship.
Ann Franz, Executive Director of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance, and she's been at the helm since the group was formed back in 2006. Do you work in manufacturing? What is it like? How did you get trained? Did you land an apprenticeship? What should people understand about working in this sector? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ann Franz here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing what is holding back job growth in manufacturing and how to create pathways for people who want to be in the manufacturing workforce. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you teach at a technical college? Are you able to place your grads into jobs? What are the demands for the skills you teach related to manufacturing? It's 800-642-1234. Ann Franz heads up the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance, and she's with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go to Russell now in Watertown. Hi, Russell. What is your story?
I'm a tool and die maker. I got my start while going to tech school, and while I was going to tech school, I got a job in a factory and, you know, was working on the shop floor and eventually worked my way into an apprenticeship, so... That's kind of how I got into manufacturing, and I do tool and die.
Yeah, and so as you look at your colleagues, did they follow a similar path as you?
I'd say a lot of them do. I mean, there's, I guess, two paths you can do to get into tool and die or any trade. You can do an apprenticeship, like a state indentured apprenticeship, where you go one day a week, or you can get your education first and get a diploma and then try to find work that way.
Okay.
But I see it's kind of a split between the two.
Russell, thank you. And, you know, Russell working in tool and die and showing his path into his job.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what's so cool. A lot of people don't realize what an opportunity registered apprenticeship is. Your company actually lets you, during the workday, go once or every other week to the technical college for training. So you're getting paid while you're going to school. I would have loved that, you know, as well as they pay your tuition. And so registered apprenticeship gives so many great opportunities. And again, I just don't think enough people know about it. And that's why we've been also trying to get kids interested in youth apprenticeship. And that's where kids, their junior and senior year, actually become like a registered apprentice, where they work at a company and do that learning. We actually had an event February 19th where we brought about 150 people together, companies and youth apprenticeship coordinators from throughout the state, to talk about how can we get more kids interested and helping companies understand what it takes to offer youth apprenticeship, because it's not that hard. These youth apprenticeship coordinators are amazing and really help step by step that company develop a program within their organization.
Thank you, Russell, for sharing that. Let's bring in Lynn now in Manitowoc. Lynn, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
And friends, this is Lynn. I'm the apprenticeship training rep in the Lakeshore area, and I work on the business services team with you.
Yes.
And I just wanted to mention that the state of Wisconsin does have our own site for apprenticeship. Your previous caller had talked about the federal site, but the Wisconsin site is wisconsinapprenticeship.org. And we have a specific page on there for featured employers or featured sponsors. Those are all companies that are actively training in apprenticeship in the state of Wisconsin. It's a good resource if people are looking for where to start.
Lynn, what have you seen by way of the number of apprenticeship opportunities? Is it growing? Is it plateauing? What are the trend lines look like?
It's definitely growing. The Bureau of Apprenticeship Standards has created new fields. A lot of people think that apprenticeship is just manufacturing, but we have expanded to medical, biotech, transportation, finance, IT. A lot of things that people don't traditionally think apprenticeship is. So now is a really good time. Almost any occupation could be apprenticeable depending on the amount of training they need and what the sponsor is looking for. But Our numbers have definitely been going up. Obviously, last year was a little challenging for a lot of employers, but the new year is definitely off to a bang with outreach from employers getting in touch, saying they're ready to start growing again and training.
Lynn, thank you so much for sharing that. That website one more time is wisconsinapprenticeship.com.
.org.
Oh, .org. I'm sorry. .org. Thank you so much for sharing. And do you see that with the companies you talk with, that they are looking more toward these apprenticeship programs and how to create it within their organization?
I really believe so, yes. In fact, Fox Valley Technical College has the most registered apprenticeship of any of the technical colleges. So we really are seeing an uptick of companies looking at this as an opportunity, because we really need to upskill our workforce. So many registered apprentices actually were working at the company, and their companies are wanting to invest in them and upskill them, so they enroll them in registered apprenticeship. Because we know with technology, we need a more skilled workforce. In fact, I just heard a term called new skill. We need the new skill people. They have lots of great skills, but we need some new skills. And that's where registered apprenticeship can really fit that need.
We're talking with Ann Franz. She's executive director of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance, working to create a jobs pipeline in the manufacturing sector. And I'm wondering, you know, yesterday we discussed the nursing shortage on our program, and we learned that there is a real nursing faculty shortage. The people who train nurses are in short supply, which then limits how many nurses you can send into the workforce. Do you find that in manufacturing, is the faculty to train students for these careers adequate?
We're manufacturing is in that same boat. We have an aging workforce. And if you look at the technical college system, where many of these jobs are being trained by those technical college faculty, there is definitely an issue with that. And quite frankly, many of them can make more working in the field than teaching. So it is an issue too.
Let's bring in George now in Monroe. George, hi.
Hi. Something I'm puzzled by. In our local paper, every single week, and I mean every week, there are great companies in this area. Knight International, Farm Equipment, International Manufacturer, Monroe Truck, Sub-Zero in Madison. They're advertising. You know, they got a list of jobs they want applicants for every single week. A lot of it's weld. You know, I can understand somebody leery of becoming a welder. That can be in, you know, it can be robotized or whatever. But these jobs are there, and people aren't even apparently applying for them, or they're not qualified, or they go and then they quit because it's too hard to work. I don't know what it is, but it's more than just there aren't any jobs, believe me.
George, thank you for that observation. Anne, what is the bottleneck here? It seems these job postings are there, but what is happening? What's the disconnect?
I think it's a couple different things. I think a lot of people don't realize the opportunities. I mean, manufacturing pays higher than most industry sectors. 92% of manufacturers in our state offer benefits. And so we actually been reaching out to people in the hospitality and retail industry, talking to them about looking at changing professions. And I was on the phone with a lady last week, and she almost was crying. She's like, you know what? I've spent 20 years working in hospitality, never having health insurance, paid vacation. And I see now I missed out. I could have a really great retirement plan if I would have gone into manufacturing. So that's one thing. We just need to communicate the opportunity. Plus, we need to elevate these individuals that work in the profession. We have a program that we've had 13 years called the All Stars, where we recognize people working from the welder, assembler, to the engineer. And we have a careers magazine that goes out to 25,000 students each year, along with our online edition on our website that has 3-minute videos of them talking about their careers. And so last year, our cover was a woman, Megan, from Samuel Vessel Pressure Group, who actually is a welder. And I'm sure when she decided that she was going to go into welding, she didn't tell her mom and dad and say, hey, I'm going to be on a cover of a magazine one day. But she is. And so we really need to elevate, because this work is so important. We need people to make things, and we make things very well in Wisconsin.
As you look in your crystal ball, is the pipeline to these jobs, will it get tighter? Will companies have a more difficult time in the future in recruiting the skilled workforce?
Unfortunately, it's a numbers game. We just do not have enough people that live in Wisconsin for all our jobs, regardless if it's manufacturing or healthcare or so forth. And so what's scary is every day, 10,000 people in the U.S. turn 65. One out of four people is out of the age of 65. So now we just don't have enough people for all the jobs that are available. So that's why we're all racing for talent, and we're going to need to really find out ways that we can get our type of careers front and center, because there's fewer people to really take those jobs.
Anne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. I really appreciate the time.
Anne Franz is Executive Director of the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance. We'll be back after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Tyler Ditter with a story about an Army Reserve veteran who now lives in Shawano County.
Joanne Shedler's family was fighting in wars long before the U.S. military existed. This is one reason the nurse joined the Army Reserve later in life and eventually co-founded the Mohican Veterans Group. Shedler lives in Gresham and shared her experience as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices initiative.
I was an older nursing student that went to Marquette University in Milwaukee. And after I graduated with my Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, a family member who is an Army recruiter talked to me and said that I could get a direct commission in the Army if I wanted to join it. I thought that was a great opportunity because of the history of my family. As a Native American, we have fought in wars since before the military, U.S. military. I was commissioned as a second lieutenant, which is the bottom ranks of officers. Our reserve unit got called to active duty. We started out at Fort McCoy in Wisconsin. We were in big barracks, and it was very dreary. And so we got a little opportunity to run into Walmart, and I bought some things to help decorate up our bathroom. The other women really appreciated that. I also am a beautician, which I did before I became a nurse, and I offered free haircuts to people because we were there after 4 months, and there was only a barber on the base. And to me, that helped with our morale. And as a leader, I think it showed that you can make the best of whatever situation you're in. I also got a tribal flag that I brought along, and I hung it outside when I got to have a little area where I did have some privacy. And that was kind of cool because it gave a lot of people an understanding that there's Native Americans that are also here. We're a whole variety of people. Parts of our unit were pulled and called up to go to Afghanistan. I volunteered to do that, but by this time I had received my promotion to major. They were looking for ICU nurses, and I was a med surg and administrator at that time. So I did not get the chance to do that, but we stayed on a few more months. And then 2004, I retired after 20 years and 6 months in the Army Reserves. So when I was back home, I became a tribal council person, a legislator for my tribe. As a veteran, I was very interested in our history. So I was a part of our historical society for our tribe. Myself and two other tribal member women who were retired Army We started the Mohegan Veterans about 17 years ago. And so we have our own Mohegan Veterans organization. We're formed because we want to recognize and be at all the funerals as honor guards. And we have an Eagle Staff, which is a memorial Eagle Staff that we've started. And my Eagle Feather, one of my Eagle Feathers that I have, when I pass on, my family can give it to our veterans. And then at my funeral, they will tie that Eagle Feather onto the staff. Our veterans group were instrumental also in putting together a veterans memorial. And in front of our clinic, we have a memorial now. And so every day we can see that there with many names that are there. So we continue to honor our veterans many ways.
That was Joanne Shedler of Gresham, Wisconsin. She shared her experience as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative, which is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Tyler Ditter.
And now, parks, public lands, boat ramps, and green space have been in high demand in the pandemic. Back in April, Governor Evers ordered dozens of state parks to close for a time amid the crowds, vandalism, litter, concerns over lack of social distancing. The Wisconsin Policy Forum looked closely at the surge into nature, what can be done to expand or improve on public land use. And you can join in. What are your outdoor pursuits? Can you get out into nature? What holds you back? It's 800-642-1234. Jacob Holzclaw is recreation warden for the Department of Natural Resources West Central Region based in Eau Claire. Jake, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. Good to be on.
And we also have Jason Stein with us, research director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum and lead author of this report called Take It Outside. Jason, welcome back.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, Jason, let's start with you. Give us some top line numbers that signal this is a surge into the outdoors. What numbers jump off the page to you and indicate Wisconsinites that, you know, we're really getting out there?
Sure. Well, you can really see it in so many different aspects of outdoor participation, which is, I think, what makes it striking. But if you look at fishing license sales, those had been gradually declining leading up to the pandemic. This year, we saw a 13.2% increase over the months post-pandemic compared to 2019. And if you look at new fishing licenses, those are really notable. They more than doubled sales in 2020 compared to 2019. State park vehicle stickers rose 40%. Annual trail pass sales for out-of-state all-terrain and utility vehicles rose 33%. And then you see at the local level, you see parks that have counters. We saw a number of those that were up substantially. We saw that sales tax collections by sporting goods stores versus general merchandise stores were on a fairly similar trend pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then during the months of the pandemic, sporting goods stores initially dropped during the lockdown and then shot up and have far exceeded general merchandise store sales during the months of the pandemic. So, you can really look, it seems like almost anywhere having to do with the outdoors, whether it's an urban park or hunting on state land, and see a big increase.
Jake, from where you are in the west central part of the state, how do these numbers translate into what you see on the ground as a recreation warden?
Well, I think we can all agree that last year is just one of the craziest years in memory. The numbers correlate exactly to what I've been seeing. Whether it's from an increase in fishing activity or hunting activity, to probably the most notable for our division was just investigation of additional crashes, because there's so many more people out and about in the outdoors, specifically ATVs and UTVs. So, our numbers rose substantially almost double what they've been in previous years.
And this really has to do with congestion out there on the trails?
Well, that could be part of it, but I think additionally, as Jason was mentioned earlier, there's new user groups out there. There's new people that are they're wanting to get into the outdoors and wanting to experience it in different ways. And I think there were just a lot of new folks that maybe weren't as experienced, perhaps hadn't been trained, trained properly, things like that.
Jason, you saw a big jump in first-time annual licenses for anglers, which come at a reduced price. We don't know yet whether these anglers will renew their licenses, but is there any indication that we'll maintain this new level of activity?
Well, it's a great question. The DNR did an online survey of those first-time license buyers, and it is worth noting that it's 10 years that you haven't bought a license to qualify. And so, in some cases, these were people who had truly never fished before. In other cases, there were people who were fishing out of state and started doing it in Wisconsin, or they had gotten away from the sport and they came back to it. And, I think but when you look at when you can draw tens of thousands of people into a new activity, whatever it is, and you could say the same when you look at bird watching apps, those downloads and tagging and things like that were also up in Wisconsin. A lot of people are probably going to return to the bars and restaurants and concerts and sporting events when they get a chance to do that. But it's hard to believe that you won't have some people that will just naturally find that they like fishing or they like bird watching or cross country skiing. And, they now have the equipment to do it and they'll continue to do it.
Jake, I wonder, do you have people who are coming to you with questions on how to use the recreational opportunities, whether it's questions of etiquette, whether it's rules, because they're new to using what is available to them in the outdoors?
Yeah, I think absolutely I have. Just throughout the spring and summer, people are, if they're wanting to go in the outdoors and partake of something, say, for example, paddle sports or, some of the silent water sports or getting out on the trails and the routes with an ATV or UTV. I think there's just additional questions this year in regards to, hey, where do I take a safety class, or how do I take a safety class, or what are the regulations for this activity? I think myself and other wardens in the field have really experienced a lot of those questions. And a good portion of those are, at least in my experience, new users.
The mantra when we go into nature is leave no trace. When you look at the properties where you are we holding that up?
As far as...
Well, disturbing the ecosystem, litter, things like that. How do you see the wear and tear of these properties as you have an influx of visitors?
Yeah, as far as specifically to, say, the state parks, I couldn't speak too much to that because I didn't work in many of the state parks. But, just traveling through them and working around some of the other public areas, I think it just stands to reason when increased activity, there is going to be increased user use. There's going to be increased littering. There's going to be increased potentially degradation to, the environment, things like that. But I think, where we're at right now is we're just kind of figuring out how to strike that balance. I mean, we want to obviously have people out in the outdoors. We want new people out there experiencing, what I myself really enjoy and love. So, yeah, there's that balance.
Jake Holzclaw there, DNR Recreation Warden in Eau Claire. Jason Stein with us, Research Director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We're taking stock of the increase in parks and trail use, purchases of fishing and hunting licenses, what this all means and what this interest means for policymaking initiatives going forward. Have you taken to the trails or gone fishing or hunting amid the pandemic? What caused you to want to explore Wisconsin outdoor offerings more? What was your experience like? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about the surge in outdoor recreation during the pandemic. My family hiked the snowy trails of Pheasant Branch Conservancy in Middleton last weekend, and goodness knows many other people had the same plan. Those trails were very busy. We even saw a kayak on the open water in the creek, and a line of parked cars stretched all along Pheasant Branch Road. Is your favorite outdoor spot getting a ton of visitors? How do you negotiate the effects on the natural environment with the crowds? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We have DNR Recreation Warden Jake Holzclaw and Wisconsin Policy Forum Research Director Jason Stein. They're with us for about 10 more minutes. Jason, let's take a closer look at funding. Our state is known for our parks and outdoor recreation, but we rank low compared to other states in the funding we put into these places. What did you find?
Well, certainly at the state level, that is true. We rank second to last for spending on parks at the state level. Now, it is also true that more parks are delivered at the local level in Wisconsin, and that when you look at it in the totality of state and local government, it's a little more balanced. But I think that ranking for the state is important because, you know, you're not going to get the sort of experience, say, that you get at Devil's Lake State Park in an urban park setting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there really is purpose for both state and local parks. And you want to have both systems to be strong and viable. When you think about funding, I mean, one thing that will help is having this influx of visitors, because in the 2015-17 state budget, the state removed tax funding from the park system, and it's now supported by user fees. So it is an advantage that when you have more users come in, you do have more revenue, but you do also, as you pointed out earlier, have more wear and tear, more costs, and so forth. So I think this is something that policymakers at the state and local level want to at least consider as they're trying to deal with a lot of other budget concerns during the COVID era.
But I wonder, you know, can upping fees at, say, high demand parks resolve issues that come with high demand, more demand? I mean, it sounds like it's a more multifaceted issue.
Well, and that is, I mean, that was something that was recommended several years ago, or at least presented as an option by a DNR report. You know, and to some degree, we have done that in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, we tend to have, from what I could see, a little less developed parks than some neighboring states. So, you know, fewer electrified camp spots, fewer, you know, not as many like rustic cabins for people to rent, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You could certainly add those elements to parks. You could add things like sponsorships to parks. I think the balancing act is for some people, you know, they want a certain kind of experience when they go to a park or they go to a public lands. And, you know, to some degree, there may be tension between things that you could have at a park that would raise revenue and things that, you know, that experience of being in nature, being in an unspoiled place.
Let's bring in Rana now in Cameron with thoughts on this. Rana, what do you observe when you're out in the wildlife?
Good morning, Kate. Good morning to your guest. We've done kind of an experiment with our grandkids this winter, and I encourage others to do it. We live in northwest Wisconsin, and we've always hiked in Amnicon and Pattison when the weather has been, you know, warm and sunny, and we've been battling mosquitoes, et cetera, et cetera. So this winter, quite recently, we took the grandkids and we did a winter hike down to the falls in Pattison and Amnicon and around on the trails, just so the kids could see, and us, truly, what the park looks like in the wintertime. And then we talked about how the water, as it freezes, as it comes down the falls, and we made snowballs and we threw them in the open water and we watched them melt as they came farther to the faster water. And we just had a great time. So if that's what you want to do, get up here soon and do it quick because it's melting, but it's still beautiful. Have a great day.
Yeah, Rana, thank you so much. And it sounds like those grandkids would have had just a stellar time. You know, Jake, hiking through the seasons and also carrying on the tradition of loving the outdoors to the next generation, so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, the outdoors was important in my family growing up. And that's part of the reason I wanted to become a warden, mm-hmm. is I wanted to, you know, help protect those resources, help protect the people that are using those resources. And now, Jason mentioned earlier, I mean, there's these, you know, issues with possible, you know, too many people or conflicts on waterways. And that's one of the things I deal with as well. And, you know, because you have one group saying, hey, you know, we want to be out here canoeing and kayak, and we don't want to be disturbed by, say, the motorboats. But the motorboat crowd, you know, they have every right as well to be on the water. And so we're just kind of working through those issues. And you know, I could almost predict that this spring, this summer is going to be as busy. But, you know, time will tell.
We're talking with Jake Holzclaw, DNR Recreation Warden in Eau Claire, Jason Stein with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, lead author of this report that looked at the jump in outdoor activities amid the pandemic. Let's bring in Jerry now in De Pere. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Hi. I just happened to turn my radio on as I'm driving across this great state, and I wanted to make a comment on the fact that I just got back into fishing, ice fishing recently, and really, really enjoyed it. And I was on a river in Wisconsin, and in talking to a number of the anglers that were out there, they were seeing like huge increases in anglers and ice fishing. And when I was down there, we were fortunate to have a visit from one of the DNR officials, real tall guy, big guy, and he was walking around. It was really, really pleasant to the anglers. There was a level of respect between the anglers and the DNR official. You know, he's walking around, talking, smiling with everybody, and seeing how our fishing was going. And it was really nice to see. It was just, it was real pleasant, and I had a great experience that day.
Oh, Jerry, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And Jerry, really finding community out there with the DNR as they walked around as Jerry got back into ice fishing, Jake.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely not the first story. I mean, just checking folks out deer hunting during the big 9-day gun deer season. I don't know how many people I talked to that said, you know, hey, I hadn't hunted in 15, 20 years, and now I'm back at it. So there's just a lot of different aspects to, you know, re-upping and getting back into the outdoors.
Jason, as we wrap up here, what sources of funding should lawmakers explore and look at to sustain these outdoor activities in Wisconsin?
Sure. Well, you know, one issue, ongoing issue, is that what had been declining fishing and hunting license fees, those conservation revenues are really important for our state's wildlife and other programs. So that's something to watch to see if they can find ways to hold on to some of these new participants and keep some of those revenues for conservation. We have the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program, which uses debt to buy public lands and make improvements on state and local lands. That's going to be up in the state budget. So there's a number of items like that that are going to be important for people to watch and for their elected officials to watch in the coming months.
Jason and Jake, thank you for joining us. Jason Stein is Wisconsin Policy Forum's research director. Jake Holzclaw is a DNR recreation warden in Eau Claire. We have a link to the study called Take It Outside. It's at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.